I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Gators Breakdown, the Gators fan podcast, because there's never a dull moment in Gator Nation.
The Gators Breakdown podcast is ready to go. I'm your host, David Waters, and you can find me on Twitter at GatorDave_SEC. And joining me for this episode of Gators Breakdown is former Mississippi State quarterback and current color analyst on the Mississippi State Radio Network, Matt Wyatt. You can also check him out on ESPN Mississippi 95.1, as well as all his film study on YouTube. Matt, once again, thank you for joining me here on Gators Breakdown.
Yeah, man. Good to see you. I'm glad that the game is finally here. We've been previewing this thing for like a year, it seems like. So, yeah, I'm glad we finally get to play the game now.
Yeah, I'm sure when Dan Mullen was announced as Florida's head coach, this is the one the Mississippi State fans circled right away.
No doubt. They really did. And, you know, the emotion in it is kind of all over the map, just according to who you talk to. Like, there's – well, I think the way I stated it in an interview today, talking to one of the guys on radio there in Gainesville, is I expect a full stadium, so you'll have 61, 62,000, 40,000 will boo Dan. When they get a chance, they'll boo him. Of those 40,000 that will boo him, I think about 30,000 are just going to do it for fun. But there will be that 10,000 that'll be booing because they really believe they hate him because he left, you know? So it's kind of, and somebody brought up the example recently, said, well, hey, look, man, it's just what we do in the SEC. I think it was Chuck Oliver. I was on his show. And he said, look, that's what we do in the SEC. He said, Spurrier wins a Heisman and a national championship at Florida. Rolls back in there with South Carolina. They booed him out of the building, and now he's works there again. They love him again, yep. You know? So it's just the way it is.
Yeah, that was – I was in the stadium too. It was bittersweet, you know, kind of hearing the boos for Spurrier, yeah. but it happened. You're right. At that point, you're the enemy for those 3 hours, but that's just how it goes. And it was funny, right. in that first year, old Spurrier got Meyer. So.
Uh-huh. Yeah, he sure did. So – it's just part of it. I think Dan knows that. He's a really, you know, intelligent guy. He knows that. And I think he also knows that a lot of the people that are going to go boo when they get a chance are people that he probably knew some of them or shook their hands at some point, and they don't really hate him. They're just doing it because they're supposed to, you know, so.
Are there going to be modified cowbells for this one somehow? Make them even louder?
Maybe? Oh, boy. I don't know, but it will be full of cowbells. I have seen some of those double-barrel cowbells. I don't know if you've ever seen one of those where they hold it in the middle, and there's a bell on either end, and they just twist it back and forth, you know. But, yeah, they'll have some of those. And, you know, the ring responsibly thing, first of all, when they started that 3 or 4 years ago, I was very skeptical going into the year. Like, you're asking people that ring these cowbells all the time and always have to be cognizant in the stands during a game. Okay, the center's over the ball, I don't ring. It ain't going to work. And doggone, man, they promoted it all summer, talked about it, did interviews on our radio shows. And that first game, we couldn't believe what we were hearing. But the entire stadium, they were looking at the video boards, you know, and they're ringing like crazy. And it would say, rest your bell when the center guy, and they would stop and start yelling. I couldn't believe that it was working. So they've kind of obeyed it. And whether or not they obey that this week remains to be seen.
Well, I think, you know, the perfect test for that is when you guys play Ole Miss at home. So that, you know, the feeling is probably similar here, at least for this year. So
we'll
get into breaking this game down. But before we do, remember you can find Gators Breakdown on news4jax.com/GatorsBreakdown. There you'll find all the Gators Breakdown episodes as well as articles from the News for Jax sports team. That's news4jax.com/GatorsBreakdown. Catch Gators Breakdown on iTunes, Google Play, and YouTube if you want the video version, or catch us live like some of you are doing now. And then share, rate, review the show, let Gator Nation know what they're getting with Gators Breakdown. And on social media, follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Gators Breakdown. So, Matt, what's the general feeling around the game right now? It probably has dampened a little bit with the loss of Kentucky, you guys coming off there. Heck, in the preseason, we thought both of these teams would be kind of undefeated coming into this matchup. But lo and behold, both have a loss to Kentucky on the resume.
Yeah, nobody saw that coming. Kentucky is a little better, I think, than people might have realized coming into the year. And Florida didn't really play that well against Kentucky at home. And State really didn't play well last week on the road. It was a very ugly game for State offensively. You know, some things that illustrate that: State went up there and had 16 penalties for 140 yards in that game. There are a bunch of them. I think it was like maybe four personal fouls that were after the play, pushing and shoving things, which is, you know, you can't do that. The other thing was false starts. There were, I hope I'm getting this right, but I thought I went back and looked at it again. But, you know, you had multiple false starts in the first half. State possessed the ball six times in the first half and had six false start penalties. So they averaged a false start per possession. And that was a thing, you know. So you go into the locker room tied 7-7, and it seemed like State had one scoring drive, lasted 8 minutes. They just went right down the field. Well, that just happened to be the one drive. They have like one false start penalty. They overcame it. The rest of the half, that whole first, and in the second half too, they were behind the chains, it seemed like, all night long. First and 15, second 24, you know. And first of all, you don't practice and work on a lot of offense for those situations. You know, you're working on your offense to go out and run on second and seven and throw the ball on third and nine, and what you're going to run on third and short. And they never could get in any kind of rhythm play calling wise because of all these penalties. And so I would say that at home this week for State, it's virtually impossible for them to play as poorly as they did last week on offense. They'll have to play better.
What's the thoughts on Joe Moorhead so far in this first season? I know much of it depends on how he bounces back Saturday from Kentucky to Florida, but what are your takeaways four games into the new era? Is he learning on the job more than originally thought coming in, maybe?
Yeah, I think, you know, if you'd asked me that question before last week, I think the answer was, I mean, that everything had gone really smoothly in those first three games. Three non-conference, a really solid road win with explosive plays at Kansas State. You know, they just ran the ball all over them. Kylin Hill had like 210 yards rushing at Kansas State, and they had some explosive plays in the pass game. Defense was dominant. So after 3 weeks, they were throwing the ball well. Tons of explosive plays. To give you an example of what we were talking about before the Kentucky game, at that time, after three games, State was leading the country in offensive plays of 20 yards or longer and had already had more 30 plus yard plays in three games than they had all of last season. So around here, man, we're like, hey, how good can this team be? This is incredible. And then last week at Kentucky, it not only struggled, it just came to a screeching halt. Fitzgerald goes out and has 20 yards rushing in the game. You know, you got six false starts. You score 7 points. You barely scratched 200 yards of total offense. The team had negative yardage on offense in the fourth quarter. I mean, it was just like, where did this come from? How could this even be possible? You know? So I think that's the thing that has, you know, generated this big time just a reaction from the fan base this week. It's not that you lost. you could go to Kentucky and play well, and they could beat you 24-21. They're a good team, especially at home. But it's the way you lost, and that is just zero continuity and punch on offense. And it really, until they get that taste out of their mouth, it really has a lot of fans worried, to be honest with you.
What differences have you noticed from the first four games from Moorhead compared to Mullen? You already mentioned, you know, the plays of over 30 yards. So maybe in a more explosive offense, but you know, are there key differences that maybe speak to some more success for Moorhead compared to Mullen?
Yes. There's one primary difference in the pass game. So I mentioned the explosive plays. The philosophy throwing the ball in all four of the games has been to heck with a 5-yard completion. We want 25-yard completions. We're pumping that sucker down the field. We are looking to get guys open past the sticks. There are no bubble screens to wide receivers in the offense. There hasn't been a single one. They've thrown a couple of swing pass screens to a running back, but that's basically it. There are no high percentage throws. They are trying to look for the home run, and they've hit some of them. And it's just a natural thing. If you practice it more often and make it a priority, and then you try it more often in the game, you're going to hit more of them. And they did. The result of that, though, has been a lower completion percentage this year so far from your quarterback. So higher percentage throws equals lower completion percentage. That all makes sense. Mm-hmm. And the other thing too is we have seen more instances, just it's every other play, it seems like, of what looks like an RPO-ish type of play where there's a run play called, but there's a pass tag to it for the quarterback based on the defense. And a bunch of times where you can tell the offensive line is run blocking, the running back is running a running play, but Fitzgerald pulls the ball out of there and throws it because you're running more RPO stuff. And I would say so far this year, that's the two biggest differences that we've seen.
Matt Wyatt joining us here talking Florida, Mississippi State preview, and we'll get into more of the game preview starting right here. Matt, of course, one of the questions that was definitely going to come up for Dan Mullen and talking to the media this week is the familiarity that he has with the Mississippi State program. And he went on to say that, you know, he has an understanding of the personnel and the teams, and you know, he knows the strength and the weaknesses. So he may not have to spend as much time on film, you know, learning what these guys do, their strength, their weaknesses, tendencies there, but also going at it the other way. These players are familiar with Dan Mullen as well. How do you see this playing out as maybe who has the advantage as far as familiarity goes?
Yeah. You know, on the surface, it looks like, you know, the former coaching staff would have the, you know, a little bit of an advantage for Mullen and guys because they're paid professionals. That what they do is they make a living breaking down another team, evaluating them, figuring out where's a weak spot, what can we do, and then go out and put the plan in based on that. So you don't have a scenario where they're going to have to spend a ton of time evaluating individual matchups, you know, like scouting individual players on the line of scrimmage and who's got what strength here and there. They're not going to have to spend that time on that. So that looks like it'd be an advantage. The issue with that is, number one, players can improve in an offseason. You know, there can be a guy who struggled with something last year who works on it in the offseason, and now he's not struggling with that anymore. You know, so like, for instance, yeah, Dan may have an upper hand in scouting players and matchups, but he's still – got to do his due diligence as a staff and scouting staff to go ahead and watch all the film and break it all down. So, and then the other thing is, you know, it's all new schemes in terms of terminology, play calls, and situational stuff. So then it's actually maybe less of an advantage for Mullen and his staff because they only have four games of film to watch and see what are these play callers at State now, what are their tendencies on third and short? Well, in four games, you're only in third and short a couple of times. So there's this great unknown. There is a great likelihood that there's going to be a fourth and one scenario in the game, and the defensive staff for Florida, they don't have any clue what state's going to call because there's no film on it at all. So there's give and take on that kind of thing. And you mentioned the other side of it where the Mullen run game, Mullen and Hevesy, the way they coach the run game, their techniques, their stances, their formations to get in certain plays, you're going to have defensive players, some seniors who play a lot of football at State who, heck, they practice against it their whole career leading into this game. There may be tendencies and formational stuff with certain plays being run that a Jeffrey Simmons and a Montez Sweat may actually recognize it because they saw it so much. And then I would imagine that all the terminology, checks at the line of scrimmage, all the things, the words that you would use in the Mississippi State offense, they're going to be using different stuff this year at Florida simply for the fact that you got to play State and you can't use the same terminology because they all know it. So it's, yes, there are some advantages you would think, and it may play a factor in the game, but I'm not sure it favors one side or the other.
How much could my co-host brought this up on the previous episode, and you know, saying there may be a wrinkle or two, as you mentioned, you know, some of the senior players who have practiced against this offense for years now, like maybe Dan Mullen can come up with something, and the offensive coaches where maybe they bait them, where they think they know what they're seeing.
Yeah.
And, yes. You know, could that come into it? Do you change something like that going into this game? As you know, Florida, you're still installing the offense in general anyway because of all the newness that's there. Yeah. But could they create a couple of wrinkles there that maybe throw these guys off on the Mississippi State defense?
I would certainly think so. Yeah, I would certainly think that there's going to be some deals where, like, you know, if the ball's on the left hash and you line up a tight end on the line of the boundary and three receivers to the field. And if you're going to run some type of zone run into the boundary, you line it up a certain way, you know, you formation it a certain way. And, you know, maybe you wrinkle it this week. In other words, we run counter, you know, and so it looks like we're zoning it there, but it's actually going back the other way. You know, there'll be some little wrinkle. I think, yes. Those are the little nuances and little bitty technical, tiny little details and things that coaches are going to think about that when we watch the game, me and you, we may not know what's going on behind it. We just see the play.
Yeah.
But they will have done something specific for that. Really, though, too, I think the reason, and we have to remember this, yes, those things can be a part of the thinking and the game plan. But the coaches, the reason they will tell you in press conferences, yeah, well, it's not that big a deal. The reason they say that is because they know, David, if you run a 4-4 and I'm slow and out of shape, okay, you can tell me, hey, Matt, I'm about to run a slant route and I still can't cover it.
Right.
Right? I can know what's coming. I still can't. They know that ultimately this does come down to personnel. And what Dan's looking at is State's got a wounded team who's good and ticked off after last week, who is one of the more physical teams in our schedule. We got to go to their place. And they have a Jeffrey Simmons at nose, another senior right next to him, a Hoyette, a Corey Thomas, those guys. They got Sweat at defensive end, who's going to be a draft pick. They got Rivers at another defensive end who'll be a draft pick next year. You know, we can fool them all we want. How are we going to block those guys? I guarantee you that's what they're thinking. And for State, their worry is this. Florida has good players on defense. They got some great guys, some big-time talented guys on that defensive front that some of them are more talented than the players we played last week at Kentucky, and we couldn't block Kentucky. You know, so the coaches, I think, as much as anything else, are trying to get their guys to win these one-on-one physical battles because that's really what will make the difference in the game.
Matt, it could be said, you know, last week was an aberration. Going back at the Kentucky, you mentioned, you know, Mississippi State probably played the worst game they could have. Mm-hmm. Before that game, did you see signs from Nick Fitzgerald maybe taking that next step as a passer? You know, a lot of the talk was, can he push the ball downfield consistently? We know that was a problem last week, but what about the games before that and maybe what we can expect against Florida?
Yeah, so, you know, he missed the first game because of a suspension.
Right.
Then against Kansas State, he had some really nice plays and explosive plays, but he was not very consistent. He was amped up, and he sailed the ball a couple times, and so his completion percentage was down. And then in week three, against Louisiana Lafayette, he was awesome. He was as sharp and as accurate and in control throwing the ball, frankly, as maybe I've seen him in his career. I came out of that third game going into Kentucky thinking, okay, based on what I saw, I think Fitzgerald is ready to go. I think he's ready to pop, especially throwing the ball. He's never had an issue with arm strength. He's one of these guys where other quarterbacks every now and then would, you know, they might watch him throw and go, holy cow, you know, he can let it rip. It's just a matter of dialing it all in because he was inexperienced throwing the ball. And, you know, against Louisiana Lafayette, you go back and you watch some of the plays he made there, some of the third down throws. He was as sharp as he's been. And again, you turn around and do what you did offensively, which is not much against Kentucky, and it's terribly confusing. You know, where did that go? But as you look a little closer, their issues on offense against Kentucky, they were not quarterback issues. He did have the one glaring mistake trying to make a play in the second half, the interception. But other than that, you know, he made some good throws. He was standing in there trying to stand in that pocket when his offensive line was having a really tough night. So I didn't think he played that poorly against Kentucky. I felt like the guys in front of him played poorly. So, you know, if I just got to believe, honestly, if he's at home this week and if that offensive line plays a little better, a little more like normal, he's going to have some success. He's going to make some plays in this game.
Two main running backs, of course, Colin Hill, Aris Williams. Is it a thunder and lightning package if we want to get that basic with it? Is, you know, Colin Hill shown some great speed so far this year. Yeah. Aris Williams, is he still the main cow back? If it's in crunch time, which guy's getting the carry?
That's a great way to phrase a question, because honestly, I don't know.
Okay.
Right now, if it's crunch time, I'm not sure which one. You know, Colin Hill just totally won the job in the offseason. Went from freshman to sophomore this year. He really took to the offseason program, just grew up and physically became this specimen and so fast. And the new staff really liked him, high on him. And so he got the majority of the carries in the first couple of games. Aris Williams didn't get a single carry against Kansas State, didn't play at all. But then came back and played against Louisiana Lafayette and has been his old self. You know, he's had big runs. So the comparison of those two, here's what Florida fans need to know about those two backs. It's not a situation where one's big, one's little, one's fast, one's slow. They are different, though. Hill is his center of gravity is a little more to the ground. He's a little lower, a little thicker. His lateral movement and burst is going to be a little more explosive. Like that jump cut, like you step past the line of scrimmage, there's a linebacker, and he'll jump cut one way or the other, and then boom, he's gone. But he also has the ability to run over people because he's so thick in his lower body. Aris Williams, the 1,000-yard rusher from last year, is leaner. He's a little taller, a little leaner, and not as thick. But he's the one who has – he doesn't necessarily have the run-off-and-leave-everybody ability that Colin Hill does. But Aris has that. You saw it last year. Man, for four solid quarters, guys will jump on his back, and he'll take them down the field and make 5 yards. The next play, they hit him at the line of scrimmage. You look up, he wiggled and made 3.5. Three plays later, he rips off a 10-yard run. They hit him at 10 yards. He drags two guys, and now it's a 14-yard run, always falling forward. And so I think they're having a little bit, they're going through the throes right now of figuring out, how do we rotate both these guys in? When do we want them in? And how do we do it fluidly? So they're in on certain plays we want them to be in on. I think that competition right now is still kind of confusing them on how they want to rotate them.
That sounds a lot like the Florida running back backfield right now. So yeah. I think we know exactly how that feels, and especially comparing, you know, two different backs. The way you compare those guys, I probably would kind of say it's kind of similar to Damian Pierce, the true freshman for Florida, and Jordan Scarlett, who's been around for a while there. Move to the other side of the ball, Matt. Of course, you know, I'm sure those guys I'm sure they're not happy with the way they performed last week. What's been the message around Jeffrey Simmons, Montez Sweat, and company of trying to bounce back this week against the Gators?
Yeah, they had a players-only meeting, and Jeffrey Simmons kind of ran that meeting. That was what the coaches told us. And it all centered around their composure and not getting these personal foul penalties where you're, you know, the unsportsmanlike conduct stuff. Jawing at your teammate and constantly getting in that and being distracted and then not doing your job. And some of that stuff went on. It hurt the defense last week. With all that said, you know, it's a little deceiving when you look at just numbers, because the truth is they played good enough to win on the road. It was a 1-score, 14-7 game with 8 minutes left in a ball game. And the defense picked one off on the Kentucky side of the field, gave the football plus field position, down 7 in the second half with a big turnover. And right after that, State turned it over through the interception, and it was kind of like down. The defense was given – they were run out on the field twice in the fourth quarter on short field. You know, and they just couldn't kind of hold up. They just couldn't hold up there at the end because the offense could not give them a blow the entire night. And you think about it. It's the fourth game of the year, and it's the first time all year long that the offense couldn't stay out there, get first downs, and put drives together. Where the defense does their job, they go over there, they've barely gotten a sip of water, and now it's 3 and out, we're back on the field again. It's the first time it's happened to them all year. So it was a learning experience. And, you know, again, so I don't think they played poorly by any stretch. They made enough mistakes to not be able to win the game with their defense. And frankly, they expected to be good enough to be able to do that. So, you know, they're hurting a little bit at corner. Jamal Peters, one of their starting corners, big guy, got hurt in the Louisiana game, was out last week. He's out again this week. So just slightly banged up there. But other than that, they pretty much got everybody on the field. And last week they were just getting blocked at the wrong times. And in that fourth quarter, they were just getting blocked. And so I think it was a wake-up call. It was a humbling experience for the defense and a reminder of just how hard you got to play for four quarters if you want to win an SEC game.
Matt, you just mentioned the secondary there a little bit. Have you seen enough from Felipe Franks to think that he can test this secondary for Mississippi State? The Florida offensive line has done well in pass blocking this year. And actually, you know, Franks has looked better under pressure this year as well. And I'm not saying, really Florida has the capability to test this pass defense, but, you know, no one so far in the Mississippi State schedule has really tested that secondary, and Kentucky really didn't need to.
Yeah. This will be the best throwing quarterback State has faced this year, you know, for what that's worth. Terry Wilson, you know, he's got some ability, but he's brand new. He doesn't really know quite what he's doing in the pass game yet at this level, and had a couple throws really that should have been picked off, and they picked one of them off. And the other guys, there's really no comparison. Kansas State had some players at receiver, but State's defensive line was so good that day, their quarterback just did not have time to get the ball down the field, you know. So what I would say is yes to your question. Well, I've seen plenty enough from Franks this year to know, already know, they're going to complete some balls now in this game. They're going to have some throws that go down the field for big plays, and they're going to, you know, complete the ball. It's just a matter of can they do it enough? Can they complete it when they get in the red zone enough, like they did in that first game where all their touchdowns seemed to be right down there in the red zone? Yeah. It'll be harder on the road in the SEC. It'll be louder. You'll be playing better players. And to me, the real thing is, look, State's defensive front is going to be fired up.
Yep.
They are, especially in the early part of that game, there's going to be some plays. I'm just saying, get ready for it. There'll be some plays where you go, man, is the offensive line even out there? Because it does not. It'll look that way a few times.
We've asked ourselves that plenty in the last.
And they had a lot of that kind of stuff against Kentucky in the first half.
Yeah.
You know, they had some sacks of Terry Wilson where, man, they get on their horse just right, and they're coming after you. Again, it's can Frank stand in there? And he seems to be a really tough character. He wouldn't be playing for Mullen if he wasn't tough. Can he stand in there and take some of that pressure throughout the game and still make those second half and fourth quarter throws? They'll have some opportunities. because, you know, Florida's got some speed out there, and State will give up some opportunities in the pass game. And it'll be a matter of, can the offensive line keep those guys off your quarterback?
A couple more here from Matt before we let him go here. Matt, what area do you see Florida potentially being able to take advantage of Mississippi State? Is it that, you know, Franks and quarterback there, something on defense? And what should Mississippi State do in taking advantage of Florida?
Okay, yeah, I would say for Florida, again, you're going to have opportunities where your receivers are open down the field. And, you know, it may be a deep shot or two. That's the other thing. None of the first four opponents really had a guy get behind the defense and complete that long home run type throw. Florida has that ability. And that's what I would say is, you know, again, I've predicted things about Dan before and been wrong. You know, I thought he'd go to Florida and have a team come out of the gates running the ball this year. Mm-hmm. And that's just not been the case. Maybe it's personnel. I don't know. So I've been wrong. But I would almost bet that they're going to watch the film and they're going to have a first drive, your first 15 plays scripted. And in there is going to be a home run shot, you know, to try to jump on top early because State will give some of those things up. So I think you could take advantage of that. And then, you know, one, I think, distinct advantage that Florida has is in the kicking game, just kind of all the way around. They block punts. They're great at kicker and, you know, they punt it well. State has been shaky there a little bit. Coverage units haven't been bad, but just in terms of punting and kicking, you know, it's a little shaky. And I see an advantage for Florida, you know, even on kickoffs. You know, State's got a guy who 4 out of 5 times he'll kick it out of the end zone, but then that fifth time it comes down at the 15-yard line, you know, if he misses it a little bit. So that's a big advantage, is that third phase of the game. And I know without a shadow of a doubt, Dan's going to put a huge emphasis on the kicking game this week. And for State, what I think their deal is, it's two things. It's two parts. It sounds like coach speak, easy, but it is. If their defensive line plays the way it's capable of, they're going to have a great shot at winning the game. Last week, they didn't really, for whatever reason, just did not really play the way they're capable of for four quarters. If they do that this week at home, it's going to be a tough win to get for Florida. And then the other side of that is, offensively, they must run the ball some. Last week, because they were all those false starts, they're constantly first and 15 and second and 20, they never could get in a situation where they could run the ball consistently. They're constantly trying to throw it to get out of negative down and distance, to the point that they only ran the ball as a team last week for like 50-something yards. It was horrible. This week, there has to be that emphasis, and there has to be that push from that offensive line where you're a 3.5-yard carry team, and if that happens, it's going to open up everything else for Nick Fitzgerald. If they can't run the ball, they're going to have a hard time scoring points.
Matt, I can't thank you enough for joining me here on Gators Breakdown, previewing this big game. I think it's big for both programs. It can probably set up the rest of the season. I think there's pressure on both head coaches to get something done here. Hey, it sets up, you know, for Florida, LSU next week. If you get this, it sets up a huge matchup there for in Gainesville, and then for Mississippi State, it's there to hang tough in that very, very tough SEC West.
No doubt. This is a statement game for the winning head coach. And, you know, in some ways, it's going to be a statement game for the losing head coach, you know, in a lot of ways. But I think it's more of an opportunity. You know, it's both first-year head coaches. So there's not a lot of consequence immediately if you lose. They ain't going to fire you next week if you lose this game. It just kind of sets you back in terms of momentum.
Right.
But the opportunity, which, you know, Moorhead at home against the former coach, Mullen on the road against his former team, whoever wins it, this is a statement game. And then, hey, if Florida goes in there and wins this one on the road, and then it's LSU the next week, I mean, it's going to be, people will forget. You win the next two, people forget about Kentucky real quick. That's what I think.
Hey, my magical word for the last few years has been progress. We didn't get it under Jim McElwain. We're seeing it slowly and slowly with Dan Mullen. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, this game would be a next step. for that. So, Matt, I can't thank you enough. You know what? In watching this game Saturday, before it starts, I may switch over to the Mississippi State Radio Network and catch it for a little while and all that, because, you know, when you bring it here on Gators Breakdown, you really bring it.
Well, I appreciate it. Yeah, y'all flip over there. My man Neil Price, our play-by-play announcer, he's from Tennessee Volunteer Country, but I promise you he's a good guy. And he does a fantastic job calling our game. So, yeah, if y'all listen, we'll be honored.
All right, Matt, thank you very much, and we'll definitely have you on here. And maybe you after the season's over with and get your thoughts on Dan Mullen's first year at Florida.
Sounds good. Thank you, David.
Matt, thank you so much.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Nobody breaks down Mississippi State better than Matt can. And I tell you what, that's a great guest to get here and get his football knowledge there. You know, he it sounds like, you know, I was going to ask him, but you know, that was kind of going along and it wouldn't get back to his day there. You know, a tough competitive matchup here. And I kind of think that's what a lot of people expect here. So what are my keys to the game? Matt mentioned it. And it really is, how does Florida handle the pressure of that Mississippi State defensive front? Felipe Franks really composed on the road last week against Tennessee, getting those turnovers helped, getting in good field position, knowing what to do with it, and really just the overall team. You know, those turnovers really, really help settle them down. You know, what happens if Florida doesn't get that same kind of fortune? Hey, look, a lot of those they forced those turnovers. They forced, except for that one fumble there when Chris came in. You know, can Florida get some type of similar big play? You know, it doesn't necessarily have to be turnovers. You know, it can be a big bomb. You know, to actually put points on the board or a big defensive stand on a third and short or fourth and short. You know, what kind of early spark can we see there? But it's really, all honestly, how I think Florida handles that Mississippi State front early and often. As Matt said, early in this game, you might be asking yourself what the offensive line is doing there. And yeah, I think on the road with the cowbells, with the crazy crowd, that offensive line, you know, there may be some communication issues. But hey, look, you go back to last week; they handled that pretty well. You have to be, because at the beginning of that game, look, what's going to be worse? You had 101,000 people singing Rocky Top like crazy, and now at Davis Wade Stadium at Mississippi State, it's going to be, 65,000, I think, with some cowbells. So a lot less crowd, but yeah, they got those cowbells going there, and the crowd's going to be venomous towards Dan Mullen. But you really just think early on, how does Florida handle that pressure, that Mississippi State defensive front, Montez Sweat and company? And really, because look, they're going to be ticked off by the way they played last week. And Jeffrey Simmons, Montez Sweat, you know, and to mention the players only meeting and how they need to get in check, you know, a lot of the personal fouls last week. So, you know, are they going to be so aggressive early on this game? And can Dan Mullen come up with some play calls to use that aggressiveness against them? You know, we haven't seen a lot of these wide receiver screens except, you know, early on in the first game of the season with Florida. Misdirection plays, the sweeps, all that stuff that we kind of expected to see from a Dan Mullen offense, we haven't necessarily seen so far yet. Do we see it early and often to get this really aggressive Mississippi State defensive front chasing, and instead of getting, you know, enforcing their way to the backfield? Other side, you know, keep Fitzgerald in the pocket, staying disciplined on the Florida defensive front seven. Look, you got to clog those running lanes for Fitzgerald here. He'd rather run inside the tackles than outside. So while Florida must keep contained, they really must clog those running lanes to keep him in the pocket, make him throw, and especially throw in these passing situations, and especially on third down. Mississippi State currently has the SEC's number two ranked offense on third downs. The Bulldogs are converting 54% of their third down. So, you know, that's good for 10th in the nation on third in third down conversion there. So a lot of that is because of what Fitzgerald can do with his legs. So it really is imperative that Florida keeps him in the pocket, keep those run lanes clogged, not let him get outside and make him beat you throwing the ball. And if he beats you throwing the ball, you take your lumps and move on. But you keep him in that pocket, make him prove that he can do it. And look, Matt said though, they're gonna be taking some deep shots. Them trying to hit the big play. They don't want to settle for yardage. They want to hit the big play. So that gives the chance where Fitzgerald must hold on to the ball. So you know, when does Florida bring pressure? And if they bring pressure, are those running lanes open? And if they are, look for Fitzgerald to take it down and run. But in passing situations, I'm not sure how much, you know, they got some experience, Todd Grantham and company, of what to do against Fitzgerald. So you know, how much do they bring to pressure? And when they do, where are the running lanes, if there are any, for Fitzgerald to pick his way through there? So, you know, there's a couple keys to the game that I think, you know, that kind of must happen for Florida to come out on top. When they travel to Starkville. So I wanted to gauge the fan base here and see what Gator fans were kind of thinking, check the confidence level of the Gator fans out there, and just wanted to see what you guys thought of how this game would play out. I did this last week for Tennessee, doing it again here for Florida versus Mississippi State. So out of 1,664 votes, I gave the choices of does Florida win close? Does Florida win by 10+? Does Mississippi State win close? Or does Mississippi State win by 10+? 54% said Florida wins a close game here. So fan base, pretty confident. Coming off the win against Tennessee on Rocky Top last week, Kentucky beating Mississippi State last week. Got some fans feeling a little more confident that this game could go the Gators' way. 22% of you said Florida wins by 10+. 18% says Mississippi State wins a close game. And then 7% say Mississippi State wins by 10 or more points there. So confidence in the Gator Nation heading into Dan Mullen's former head coaching job at Mississippi State. So, of course, got a lot asked a lot of my prediction for this game. And I really go back and forth on it, and it really is, you know, how does Franks perform on the road, much like last week? And I threw a couple stats out there today. We talked about the Mississippi State offense and how they do on third down, and you know, Florida and Franks will have their work cut out them for as well on this Mississippi State defense that ranks 7th in third down conversion for percentage with 24.5%. That's how much they give up. Only 24.5% of Mississippi State defense gives up third downs. Florida's offense ranks 87th in the nation in third down conversion percentage with 36.6. So, you know, it's not a must. You know, Florida's won some games with this third down offense not looking the best so far, but this is the stiffest test that they've had so far as going against that defense. But part of getting better on third down is Felipe Franks. So far this season, he's only 9 of 23 for 39% on third down. 9 of 23 for 39% on third down. Is all that his fault? Nope. There's been some drops in there, some throwaways. But still, you know, that stat still stands, 9 of 23. So Florida has to get something going on third down to help Felipe Franks find some more open receivers. Receivers have to get open. But that 9 of 23 really has to improve, I think, here. So 21 of those attempts are third and fourth or longer. 13 are third and seven and longer. 5 are third and 10 plus. So there we go. It's just get better on third down, offense and defense. We you know, when Grantham was hired, the whole famous third and Grantham thing came in there. And look at Mississippi State, the third down defense wasn't too bad last year. It's been okay so far at Florida this year, and we'll see kind of where it goes this year and kind of how many short yard situation Mississippi State finds themselves in on third down. Whew. So my prediction, look, guys, I'll go ahead and do it. I'll call the upset. I'm gonna say the Gators are gonna do it. I'm gonna say the Gators are going into Starkville, coming out with a win, 27-23 Gators. Look, going into this season, I still think Mississippi State probably is the better team right now, but there is a time where I think you can pick upsets to happen. And right now, you know, going into this game, it still would be an upset. Now, when November rolls around, who knows where these teams are at right now or then. So right now, I still would consider it upset, but I'm picking the upset. I'm going to pick the Gators to march into Starkville. I think Dan Mullen's going to just throw the kitchen sink at them. Creative play calling on offense. I mentioned the misdirections, some screens, some things we haven't seen before. I think may be unleashed here when the Gators travel to Starkville. And look, this, I'm really excited for this game. I think this game could be a classic game with the way it plays out. I think the emotions are going to be running so high. I think the Florida players are going to want to be playing for Dan Mullen. Yeah, they don't know those guys are going to get so much, but they're going to want to play if they fully bought in. If these guys are buying in, and I think we see that week by week of the buy-in these guys have. They're going to go out there and play for their coach. They're going to go out there and play for themselves. But Mississippi State on the other side, I'm telling you, there's going to be a lot of venom from the players. We've heard things of, hey, look, Dan Mullen only gave us 5 minutes in his farewell speech when he was leaving. So a lot of those players feel slighted, and fan base feels slighted, of course. And look, they feel slighted because, oh, he kept saying he wasn't going to go, or what do you expect a coach to say when he's talking with other jobs? Of course he's going to say that. So I'm sorry. When it's all said and done, you know, it's Florida. It's a program that, you know, takes its football very seriously. It was going to pay him $6 million, and it's a place he's been before. He knows the expectations. He knows he can win. It made sense move there. So, but you know, Mississippi State, they go back. They lost athletic director Scott Strickland to Florida, and then they lost their head coach to Florida. So there's a lot of venom going on here and this spewing back and forth between Mississippi State and Florida. But when it's all said and done, I'm picking the upset. I'm picking our Gators to come out of there 27-23 and setting up a big game next week against LSU. But as I said, going back into the preseason, I found myself no way picking this game because of the trenches, because of Mississippi State's defensive front against this Florida offensive line. I think the offensive line's getting better as the week goes on. I still don't think it's a strength of this team, but lately they've been serviceable. Pass blocking has been, I'll say, good. And last week against Tennessee, they're coming off their best run performance. So I think the offensive line's finding their way, and then Mullen gets creative, and Florida squeaks out a Starkville with a victory. So let's go take a look around the SEC this week. Some big games again around the SEC East. But let's start. We'll start in order here. The noon games, Louisiana at Alabama. That game will be over with in about 10 minutes. Arkansas, Texas A&M. Arkansas, not so good, not very good. Played Auburn, kind of tough last week. But Texas A&M, can they lick their wounds? Hey, look, when teams, we've heard, seen it in the past too. When you could play Alabama and then you play the very next week, you don't really play all that good. So maybe that game's a little closer than we think. So Tennessee at Georgia is the CBS national game. I don't know how in the world, even before Florida-Tennessee last week, even if you didn't think Florida was going to beat Tennessee, wouldn't you have picked Florida-Mississippi State just because of the Dan Mullen storyline? But I do know Mississippi State vouched hard for the SEC to the SEC to make that a night game. It's a 6 o'clock kickoff, so it's only, I think Mississippi's an hour behind there. So sorry, it is a 5 o'clock for them, but I know they wanted a later kickoff there. But Tennessee and Georgia is the 3:30 game. How does Tennessee respond after getting pounced by Florida last week? And Georgia not playing its best, but played well enough against Missouri last week. 4 o'clock on the SEC Network is Southern Miss and Auburn. Not much there. 4 o'clock as well on the SEC Network, Tennessee State at Vanderbilt. Not much there. Florida and Mississippi State kickoff at 6 o'clock on ESPN at 7:30. The other big SEC East matchup, South Carolina against undefeated Kentucky. As Kentucky get their first loss, had a South Carolina come in to the Commonwealth and Will Muschamp there. A lot of people surprised when the line first came out. South Carolina was favored in that game and not Kentucky, but that line has swung back to Kentucky's favor, and they're now favored at home, which is probably the way it should be. But can Kentucky keep it going? You know, that asking a lot to come off of a win against Mississippi State and turn right around and do it again. How does Kentucky handle the praise? That I think that's the question I have. Everybody's patting them on the back right now. And if you want those special type of seasons, you gotta stack up good wins in consecutive weeks somewhere along the way. Can they do it again when they host South Carolina? And at 9 o'clock, we get a pretty late SEC game here after Florida Mississippi State on ESPN. This one's on ESPN as well. Ole Miss visits LSU the week before LSU comes to the Swamp. I think that one can be pretty sneaky here. Ole Miss, I know, didn't play Alabama tough at all. The LSU offense is still finding their way. So if this Ole Miss offense can get anything going, and this LSU offense kind of still playing similar to what they've played throughout the season, that Ole Miss LSU game can be sneaky. If at all, LSU's looking ahead to the Florida game. But also, you know, I think if this Ole Miss offense just finds a little bit of a spark, that could be a dicey game. LSU had a dicey game last week at home against an opponent they really, really should have beat. So we'll see how that plays out. So that's the SEC for week five. Some pretty good games there. But one we'll all, of course, have our eyes on. 6 o'clock, ESPN, Florida visits Mississippi State as Dan Mullen returns to Starkville. So, guys and girls, thanks for listening to this episode of Gators Breakdown. Thanks to Matt Wyatt for joining us here, breaking down Mississippi State like nobody else can. I hope you got a whole ton of information that you find valuable there from him. And, hey, look, if you want to hear the other side of things, be sure to check out the Mississippi State Sports Radio Network there and the football analysis from Matt Wyatt there. He's a former Mississippi State quarterback, so he knows what he's talking about. Follow Dan Mullen really, really close. He kind of knows what to expect from Mullen. And I think, you know, you could just kind of hear what he was saying, that this is going to be a tough competitive matchup. And there are some places this Gator team can take advantage of. I think most of it is if Felipe Franks has some time to throw, then watch out for some big plays from the Gators. So for Matt Wyatt, thanks again for him joining us. I'm your host of Gators Breakdown, David Waters. You can find me on Twitter at GatorDave_SCC. Guys and girls out there, thanks for listening to this episode of Gators Breakdown.